In this week's Grizzle podcast, Grizzle sat down with Sean Kunkun, the CEO of Dolly Varden, to discuss how he's navigating the silver market and future catalysts for his company ahead.
Today's Spaces is sponsored by Dolly Varden as a part of Grizzle's Mining 101 series. This is the second episode we're doing with Sean Kunkun. And for those that don't know, Dolly Varden is a silver company focused on exploration and development in BC's Golden Triangle in Northwest Canada. And their shareholders include everyone from precious metals tycoon Eric Sprott, Hecla Mining, and Fidelity. And an interesting fact about Sean is since he joined Dolly Varden, he's helped grow their market cap from 20 million to over 200 million. So we're super excited to have Sean join us today to talk all things silver. And it's just a super interesting time to be in the space. So Sean, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And before we get into the macro, like discussing the Fed, maybe for those that aren't familiar with Dolly Varden, could you just provide more color for investors on what you guys do and maybe some history about yourself? Because I know you have over 20 years experience in the mining industry.
Yeah. So in terms of myself, I have spent 20 years in the mining industry. I've helped companies access capital, build projects, make discoveries, you know, all the components, whether it's through exploration, development, production. And ultimately, you know, my goal is I work for shareholders. And, in the case of Dolly Varden, how we've been able to grow the company from, you know, a 20 cent company into a company that's trading closer to a dollar a share and grow the market cap from 20 million to over 200 is through growing our mineral inventory. And there's two ways I know how to grow ounces in the ground. Number one is through discovery. So I've got a great team of scientists that are out there following up on where there is silver and silver veins on the property and extending those veins and building tonnage and ounces in the ground. And then the other way I know how to do that is in a boardroom. So there's some very logical regional consolidation opportunities where there's some other mines that are neighboring our property that we've purchased, and those mines have come those deposits have come with mineral inventory, and that's really enhanced our existing portfolio. So we're driving value. You know, my thinking is mining companies are depleting their mineral deposits, so they need to replenish those. And my goal in Dolly Varden was to inventory as many ounces as we can. And in the future, this property, this company, we will either move it into production ourselves or a larger entity will acquire us.
And it's a really interesting story you have going on there just in terms of expansion. I know you guys are launching a 40K meter drill program this year that we'll get into later in the spaces. But I just want to focus back on the macro and what we saw today. You know, we had a surprise hike from the Bank of Canada. So inflation is clearly still a big issue. Then you have the U.S. Federal Reserve meeting next week and the markets are hoping for a pause. What's your outlook on the current macro backdrop at play and how this will impact precious metals going forward?
Well, it's interesting. Like I think of so many things when you bring up the topic. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, we're in a world right now where, you know, I think it was Monday where Apple was flirting with a $1 trillion valuation, right? And you know, you look at there's about 8 stocks in the U.S. that are responsible for the markets, you know, going green on certain days. And think of the thousands of the other companies that are struggling. You know, this reopening out of China has been sluggish. You look at what Saudi Arabia has done in terms of its cuts and breaking away from OPEC. So there's obviously some major headwinds that we as a globe are facing. And, and now we're in this environment where you've got unprecedented debt levels amongst all these sovereigns, amongst a lot of corporations, amongst a lot of individuals. And we've gone from the cost of capital being free to getting back to historical averages where we're 5% now. But the percentage increase on that borrowing cost is exponential. And one of the things that come to mind for me is, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, if you're in a rate rising cycle, that's negative for precious metals. And, you know, when I study history and I study that period around 1979, 1980, when Volcker was raising rates in the U.S., the greatest move that happened in the gold price, if you go back and you look at the numbers and you look at the charts and you look at the data, was actually during a rate rising cycle. So it wasn't until the nominal rates got higher than the real rate of inflation. So if we think the real rate of inflation is 10%, we're going to need rates up at 10% before we break inflation. And it's not until you get the nominal rate surpassing the real rate that the precious metals cycle comes to an end. So I think I'm saying the greatest move that I've witnessed studying history in precious metals was when gold went from, call it $100 an ounce to $800 an ounce in the 80s. And that move was on the back of rates being taken higher. And so, and I think we're in a similar time right now. And, you know, could that translate into $3,000 gold, $5,000 gold? And if you think about debt levels and entitlements, and you think about just the amount of debt and currency that is now in the system, it would support a gold price that was calculated multiples higher than it is today. And the reason that I've focused on silver is, again, looking at history, whether it's recent history of 2020, 2011, 1980, silver outperforms gold.
Sean, great, great data and historical perspective. And one question I was going to ask you, and I'll get Margo to post up the graph, just speaking specifically to this, you know, this concept. I think it's very important here, right? You know, the idea is that, you know, people think rates rise, that opportunity cost becomes less because now, you know, you have, you know, 5%, over 5% in money market, you know, I have other places to put my money. We're going to put up a graph in the Nest, which is gold versus U.S. 10-year TIPS index. And so we've had the TIPS index yield go from, let's call it minus 1.2%. So that's your kind of real yield, and that's not a great place. You would want to own gold in that time. And then go all the way to positive 1.4%. So we've had a 3% move there. But surprisingly, and this is coming back to, you know, your thoughts, we've had gold go up in that environment, and that almost, it delinks the correlation completely. It's fascinating. It really is it's a fascinating matchup. I'll pull up the graph and get it in the Nest. But Sean, we've decoupled. It's in the Nest now. But so that relationship between gold and U.S. 10-year TIPS index yield has decoupled. And I just kind of want to ask the question: what's different this time? Does the 70s give us, you know, 70s, 80s give us the, you know, the reasons why? And is that just because headline inflation is high?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's a really great question. You know, it's interesting, you know, to see, you know, all the correlations and all the relationships, you know, whether it's gold in the US dollar, the gold oil ratio, you're looking at all these different relationships. It's interesting because we've seen the dollar as strong as it has been relative to other currencies. And yet we've seen a strong gold price. So, you know, what gives me a lot of comfort having such a heavy precious metals weighting is, at some point, if the dollar breaks, what is that going to mean for gold? So if we can have gold prices as strong as they are amongst a very, very, very strong dollar, what does it mean if the dollar does roll over?
Absolutely. And you know, the other side too is, you know, gold's been doing incredibly well in yen terms, right? Like in many other countries, gold's been great.
Oh, exactly. You know, you look at gold and every other currency outside of the dollar, and you know, maybe the Brazilian real, and there's maybe one other currency, but you know, gold is a place that you'd want to be if you're in the UK, if you're in the euro, if you're in Canadian dollar terms, anywhere else in the world outside of the US dollar. And then even in dollar terms, it's it's performed very well, but even better in other currencies.
Yeah, for sure. And now, just to talk about the gold silver relationship, as you earlier stated, you feel like we're in that coiled part of the opportunity cycle in gold, and the way to really get leverage into that is silver. Could you talk about the history of that, and also where the gold silver ratio stands today? It's obviously at an elevated level. How we get back to more normalized levels.
So I think if we look at the natural relationship in terms of how we find gold and silver and what ratio we find it within the Earth's crust, for every 15 ounces of silver, we find 15, 16 ounces of silver, we find 1 ounce of gold. So the natural relationship is about 15.5 to 1. If we look at it from a mining perspective, so what are we mining every year? For every 8 ounces of silver we mine 1 ounce of gold. So those are two data points we can look at, and whether that means it should be priced, if we took the middle there, and if we said, okay, is it a 10 to 1, 11 to 1 ratio, what is the right value, how many ounces should you need of silver to get 1 ounce of gold? Now if we look at where they're priced today, it's actually closer to 80 to 1. And if we looked historically, and then depending on how we define historically, but let's take the last 50 years, and we looked at the average, is probably closer to 30 or 40 to 1, and right now we're at 80 to 1. My thinking in building Dolly Varden was, as bullish as I am for precious metals, there's different times where gold holds its value better than silver, and then silver outperforms. So what we've actually got at Dolly is 50% of our mineral inventory is silver, and the other 50% is gold. Now, why I think that's important is, if you get into a recession, a really nasty recession, let's call it on the verge of a depression, historically, silver has not traded well. One characteristic of silver that's different than gold is, all the gold that's ever been found, mined, produced, converted into, dory, jewelry, it's all here. Gold really does not get consumed, whereas silver is an industrial metal. And its industrial characteristics shine on the metal, particularly when we are meeting some headwinds with the economy, and it gets treated like all other industrial metals. It gets treated like Dr. Copper. It gets treated like anything else that we consume, and that's why if you go back to March of 2020, the relationship or the ratio went to a record all-time never seen before high, which was 125 to 1. You needed 125 ounces of silver to get 1 ounce of gold. We've never seen an unprecedented number. Why? Because the world shut down, right? And in that moment, silver, it traded as if it was worthless. And so for me, not knowing how we ultimately get to where we're going, which is, I think, a universe where precious metals are going to trade at a much higher value than they are today. In between now and then, we could get into some gnarly times where, we do face recessions, we do face uncertainties, we do face times where the price of silver is challenged. And we have seen that over the last few years, specifically March of 2020. And to insulate my shareholders from that, having that strong gold weighting has really helped us. But ultimately, I'm here because I think when we move into a mature part of the precious metal cycle, the other side of silver, which is silver forever has been viewed as money. And it is, like gold, has been used as money, has got all those precious metals components, is a monetary metal. And it's really that support and that interest. Like if we look at the silver market right now, 70% of the silver that gets purchased is for industrial purposes. 30% is being bought by people who see it as money, who see it as a store of value, who are buying it for all the reasons they buy gold. And what I've seen really moves the price, what really moves the needle, is when you have an increase in the investors that are accumulating or acquiring silver for its monetary attributes. So if we look at times where, you know, we're either going through a banking crisis or we're going through a time where all the characteristics of why you want to be in the insurance product of precious metals are important, silver outperforms gold because it's, they say historically, gold is for kings, and whereas silver is for gentlemen. And there's a lot more gentlemen than there are kings. And that's why when, it's such a small market, when you get a little bit of appetite, a little bit of demand coming into that market, the price moves violently.
Fantastic recap, Sean. And I just posted in the Nest the gold-silver ratio and that spike that you spoke to in 2020, COVID. It's just remarkable, right? You see how that industrial fear just comes in, and it just literally went from I just posted on the Bloomberg News. It went from 84, and it literally spiked to over 213. Just but therein lies the opportunity, right?
And then from that $11.95 low, we saw the price go to $30 an ounce in just a few months, right? So you almost had a 300% move in the metal. Whereas, what did the price of gold do? I'm going off memory here. I think during the COVID low, we might have got to around 1600, and we saw gold top out at around 2100. So again, from a percentage gain increase, and again, if you go back to, and study, price action, it took gold about 13 months to move from 1400 to 2100, where, silver, made a far stronger move in a 6 week period versus a 13 month period.
And so, just thinking about that, right? That one thing I've always been impressed about, that silver is one of those things where you need to have it on before it goes, right? Whereas a lot of other things like oil and gas, I can kind of play, having played commodities, Scott can attest to it too. There's the commodities that we just, we just put our flag in the ground because when it goes, it goes. And there's the ones that, you'll have a chance, but silver's, it really is one that rips. You need to have your position before it. And you need to have that bet on before, and that's what kind of makes it interesting.
Yeah, and the challenge, I've studied silver companies, and I'll tell you, there's not a lot of silver deposits that are out there in the world. It's a very unique and rare occurrence. Typically, the silver that we mine comes as a byproduct. It comes from a zinc mine, it comes from a lead mine, it comes from a copper mine, it comes from a gold mine. And really, if you look at the challenges that are facing the mining sector, whether it's leftist governments, whether it's more stringent environmental regulation, whether it's just communities saying we don't want this in my backyard, we're going to face a very, very significant supply shortage in a whole host of commodities. And why that's important to silver is if silver is the byproduct and we're getting less copper out of the ground and we're getting less lead out of the ground and less zinc out of the ground, that's going to impact silver because, really only 30% of the world's silver comes from pure silver mines. They're very, very, very rare. And unfortunately, a lot of the world's silver is centered in places where, there are jurisdictions where really there's not a strong, long-standing mining history. So you look at a country like Bolivia, or you look at a country like Argentina, countries that did have traditionally good, stable, mining operations like Peru or Chile. We're seeing big changes, but with new governments where, it's becoming increasingly difficult to advance projects. There's been some big challenges out of Mexico. Mexico's known as, the silver capital of the world. It's becoming more and more difficult to, get permits and to advance projects. And then, of course, the difficulty accessing water. Silver is so rare, so unique. There's just a handful of companies that have real projects that are. So how do you play silver? It's very, and that's why you talk about the silver bullion and the price moves and how they're violent and how they're quick and how you have to be there. Well, if you're looking for leverage, there's very, very, very few ways to play silver publicly. And that's, again, why I saw an opportunity in Dolly Varden, where you had this big, high-grade resource, past producing mines nestled in a safe mining jurisdiction in Canada. And I just thought, this is going to trade at a monster premium. It'll be one of the only few ways to play silver publicly. We're listed in the US, we're listed in Canada, we're listed in Frankfurt, we're growing our mineral inventory. It's high grade, it's in a safe jurisdiction. This is going to be a very rare equity amongst a very unique group of equities.
Sean, I just had a question because, you're right, there's not a lot of pure silver plays out there. You're one of the few. And I'm thinking it's kind of similar to copper. There's not a lot of pure copper plays, and we're seeing a huge amount of M&A activity going on in that space. Do you think we could see something similar for like a lot of M&A for silver going forward? Because as you said, there's going to be a lot of industrial uses for silver for, solar panels and other things. Could you see that playing out similar to how it's playing out for the M&A we're seeing in copper, or would you not really compare the two?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think, whether you're talking gold, copper, silver, the other thing that I see is you can put up a chart that correlates really well where you get these price spikes with M&A activity. And I think as you move into a more mature market where you're getting strong price activity, it does spark a flurry and an increase in volume of M&A transactions. And we really have seen very, very few M&A transactions. We've seen some mega mergers. We've seen some monster mergers in the mining space. But really, we're not at a part of the cycle, which makes me think that we've, like this, this next run, whether it's 5 years, 8 years, we've got a long way to run where I envision a universe where you get silver prices going through the old high, which is $50 an ounce. It's one of the few metals that has not surpassed its 1980 high. And so once we get through 50, I think, we're going a long way in terms of where the potential of where silver can go in terms of price. And then I think you'll see a flurry of M&A transactions once it breaks through the old high. And until then, I just, I'm trying to accumulate as many ounces in the ground. Because right now there are companies that are out there that you can buy that are trading at pennies an ounce in the ground. And, we'll move into a market where the market pays dollars an ounce in the ground, and, whether it's $5, $10. But right now there's companies where you can literally acquire them for pennies.
And so let's move on to your assets, because I know in 2022, you guys did a big deal to buy Homestake Ridge. Could you maybe give us like an overview of your assets and your plans if you plan to do any more M&A in the future?
Yeah, I think it's important to really talk about the area, because we're in a setting where we're in a world-class jurisdiction. We're in a geological setting where there's been 150 million ounces of gold discovered, 800 million ounces of silver. So that's the backdrop. The backdrop is we're in the most prolific, juiciest rocks on the planet. And they host big deposits, deposits that are multiples bigger than the one we've already identified. And so we started with an old mine that Herbert Hoover took into production in the 1920s. I think Huber was like the 45th president of the United States, a mining engineer. So he took the old Dolly Varden mine into production in 1919. And then the other mine that we have in the portfolio, Torbrit, past producing mine, was producing in the 1950s. So what we did is we methodically, thoughtfully put together a land position in the Golden Triangle, most prolific rocks on the planet, where we've now consolidated, including the home state ground that you mentioned. We've got seven deposits along a 15-kilometer strike. They're open at depth. We think they're connected. We think we're just scratching the surface of what's going to be found on the project. And now the next phase of growth, like we've, you mentioned, you know, the drill program. We've launched a 45,000 meter drill program. So we've got four drill rigs that are turning around the clock. We've got 50 people up at camp, and our goal is to expand, to extend, and to discover new deposits. And our team did a phenomenal job in 2022, where we hit the best gold intercepts drilled in the Golden Triangle in 2022. And we hit the best silver intercept that our property's ever seen. And, you know, I mentioned the rich 100-year history of the property, which included past production. So we're finding the best grades that this project's ever seen. And we've got, like, you know, we've got a healthy treasury. We've got no debt. We've got about $25 million in the bank. So we've got the money. And we've got the scientists, and we've got the drive, the passion, and the business acumen to continue to drive this company forward. And, you know, I always say, you know, we're limited to our own ambition and hard work. And, you know, I'm 42. I've got a lot of runway ahead of me. I've got a young team, but a team that's got a lot of experience. We've put together a phenomenal board of directors, you know, guys that that were leading companies like Newmont and silver companies like Hecla. So we've got a phenomenal team that's done it before, and also not just led some of the biggest mining companies in the world, but also sold little companies to these companies. So that's the key in shareholder value that we're trying to create. So, you know, I think we're well positioned. I think we're going to have a lot of news. And I think regardless of the challenges we will face in the future, you know, when we face a challenge, we've come up with some elegant solutions, whether that's to buy projects, whether that's to continue to attract top level talent, because at the end of the day, it's all about the people that you have running the organization. And I think our strongest attribute at Dolly Varden is we've got a lot of bench strength, and we've particularly, our competitive advantage is my crew knows the rocks in the Golden Triangle better than any other. And that's why they've been able to repeatedly, consistently make new discoveries.
Interesting. And just going back to the 40K meter drill program and you guys making new discoveries, how many deposits do you expect to uncover with this drill program? Like, do you guys have a framework? I know there's like 5 kilometers in between your assets. So that's a pretty big chunk. What's kind of your outlook on like how many deposits you guys are expecting to uncover, if you have any? I don't know.
So listen, I'm not a geologist, right? But one thing that I can do is I can identify a pattern. And what pattern that I even, you know, my untrained technical eye has identified is every 1.5 kilometers along this trend, there's a major structure. And that's led to 7 deposits. So, you know, what I would think success would look like is in that 5.5 kilometer gap that's not been explored. And the reason it wasn't explored is we had fragmented ownership of different companies that, and we consolidated and purchased, and now we have 100% interest of the whole package. I would expect to fit another three deposits in that 5.5 kilometer stretch. You know, the periodicity of the area tells me that every 1.4 kilometers, there's another major structure, another major deposit that's being found. And that's the relationship in terms of distance between the existing deposits. But that's only one opportunity. Finding a new deposit is one opportunity. But really, I think the big opportunity here is at depth. We're only down 300 meters on these deposits. And, you know, projects that I cut my teeth on early in my career, they went down a mile deep. And so I think one of the big opportunities and what I've seen in my career is as you get deeper, you know, as you get closer to the source, the grade and the tonnage improves. And so we could be on the cusp of uncovering, you know, a very, very, very significant deposit. And if you look at some of the drill results that we put out last season, so think about this. Our average silver grade is about 300 grams per ton. But let's take the Wolf deposit. As we went incrementally deeper, the average grades elevated to almost 600 grams per ton. So we're seeing almost a doubling of grade as we go incrementally deeper. That's very, very, very encouraging. And it's the same thing on the gold side. You know, we've got an average grade in the indicated part of the resource at around 7.5 grams per ton gold. Well, we're focusing on the high grade and we're hitting 27 grams over 9 meters. 45 grams over 25 meters. So we're seeing like world-class gold intercepts that are reminiscent of Brucejack, Eske, Premier, some of the, you know, most storied, treasured deposits in the area.
It's very exciting, Sean. That's like a, you know, it's we, you know, we're yet to, you, from your perspective, what's ahead will be better than what you've uncovered so far, just given the depth of and what you've seen, and with respect to your that just that that one point every 1.5 kilometers, what you've seen historically, it seems like this the one thing that you made very clear is 2023 is the year of resource expansion, and clearly that's what this 45,000 drill program is going to do, right?
That's right. That's right. And I also think, like, if we take a step back, like I was analyzing financing activity amongst the sector, amongst the space, right? And this just goes to highlight where we are in terms of investor interest and the opportunity for investors. So if you go back to 2012, you know, we would see like $4.5 billion get raised for companies in the space. That was the norm. And 2012 was a bad year. 2012 was the year that, you know, gold had rolled over from the top. You know, we saw the highs in August of 2011. And then an even tougher year, 2013, you know, we saw gold fall from 1500 to 1300, still $4.2 billion got raised for the sector. You know, last year, only $1.8 billion was raised in the space, okay? And why I'm highlighting, you know, North American precious metals, brokered equity transactions, and looking at $4 or $5 billion numbers versus, you know, $1.5 billion numbers is because, you know, Dolly Varden, which is, we've raised about $65 million. We've done it at a time where money's been scarce. You know, our investors have been few and far between. We've done it at a time where only the best projects get money. And it tells me that as investors have focused on this project, it tells you how special it is, how unique it is. And if we could do it at a time when we're facing all these challenges, we're in a time of scarcity, what do we look like when we move from scarcity to abundance? What do we move as we move from a bear market to a bull market. I think we'll be a leader, and I think that we'll attract the capital that's required to continue to grow this deposit and move it forward. And I just think that, look, it's we're in a great spot. You know, we're at the starting gates. You know, we're at the head of the pack. We got great pole position here, and you know, we got a full tank of gas. We got a great team driving this thing forward, and now, you know, we're going to have more drilling that's ever been done on this project and it's happening this year, and it's happening right now. So stay tuned for results. You know, if they're anything like they were last year, you know, I think Dolly is going to continue to perform really well.
Sean, yeah, very exciting setup. And one, I posted a graph into the nest. I'm certain it probably looks very similar for silver, but you know, it's precious metal on the whole. The large cap gold, as defined by GDXJ, GDX, and divided by GDXJ, it's just been incredible how the seniors have outperformed the juniors. When do we see that turning? And obviously, that's obviously an indicator for as well the value of their paper relative to juniors. Just wanted to get your thoughts on where we are in the part of the cycle where A, valuations are cheap across the board, but B, juniors are especially cheap. How can we think about this as a construct with respect to M&A, piggybacking off Margo's point, and also as you brought up the capital raise, but I think it's an interesting opportunity.
Yeah, and I think it really highlights the point that, you know, we're just in the beginnings of this next bull market, because had we'd seen a long lasting significant outperformance of some of these junior exchanges like junior indexes, that would tell me we are at the end of the cycle. And the fact that, you know, we haven't even seen the developers catch a bid. So what I've witnessed, watching precious metals markets and studying historical precious metals markets is, you know, you have the seniors, first you have the royalty companies, like the Francos of the world, they're your bellwethers, they're good places to hide in a bear market. Those are your first equities to move in the space. Then you've got your senior producers, then you've got your mid-tier producers, then the developers go, and then in the ninth inning, your juniors catch a bid. And so we've seen the seniors lead. I'm waiting to see the developers catch a bid. And I think what'll spur that is some of these seniors being acquisitive and recognizing and executing transactions where they're being aggressive and they start bringing in projects. But I think it also goes to show that there's a real shortage of quality projects that are going to be real and are going to be become mines. And I think, and I've talked about like the have and the have not market. There's a lot of sub $10 million explorcos that are going to stay sub $10 million explorcos. Focus on companies that, you know, have the ability to raise money, have the projects that are being given the money, because those are the ones that have the best shot. But again, we're very, very early in the cycle. And, you know, I think, if you look back 12 months, the HUI is, which one of the indexes I follow, it's up a modest 3%. And if you look at how well gold has done and how well silver have done in that same time period, it's like silver's up three times the HUI. Like it should be the other way around. So that, you know, silver's up 9% in the last 12 months, HUI's up 3. Like, so it tells me that we're moving from the sub basement to the basement. We're getting to that ground floor, and we're about to now start a precious metals bull market. So it's great. It's great for any new investor. It's great for anybody who's got some capital on the sidelines. I think this is a time where If I was allocating, like I've already made my bets and I've already, my dance card is full. If I was allocating new capital to the space, I'd probably start with the developers because the majors, I don't see the growth. In order for Newmont to continue to produce 6 million ounces of gold every year, they're going to need to replace that, right? So they're going to need to go and buy ABC company to replenish that mineral inventory. I want to be an ABC. And I think what Dolly represents is it represents a company that's got a resource, a resource in a high grade, in a high grade resource in a safe jurisdiction, but most importantly, it represents growth. And we're doing it through the exploration bit, we're doing it through acquisition, and we, in my opinion, we will be a highly sought after takeover candidate. And it's just a function of these larger companies depleting their mineral resources. So, I think you want to be in the dollies of the world.
Sean, it's a great point on these large cap companies. One of the challenges you whenever you look at them is that they're void of growth. You made that point at the start, right? That's across the commodity complex. But I would say, would you not say it's very acute in the gold and silver precious metals market?
Because I know this business better than other sectors, I may not be the best person to sort of to evaluate that, but I it's an interesting business where you don't see a lot of companies in our space invest in exploration. It's they get punished from their shareholders when they do. And so they end up having to go out and make very, very costly acquisitions. And so maybe it is exaggerated in this particular industry.
Sean, I wanted to ask you. I know I brought it up earlier in the spaces, but you have a really interesting group of shareholders from Eric Sprott to Hecla Mining. Could you maybe talk about, why they saw interest in Dolly Varden? Because I feel like this really different you guys from your peers.
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, it's, it validates what the company's doing and it validates how real the opportunity is, to get a miner, and I gotta take my hat off to Phil Baker at Hecla. Hecla is up 17%, whereas like most of the peers are flat or lower. So, and I think, I think, what I asked myself, why is Hecla up 20% and all the peers are flat and the HUI is only up 3%? And I think the reason for that is Phil Baker at Hecla has focused on high grade silver deposits in safe jurisdictions. Now, and if you look at Dolly Varden, 25% of the capital I raised came from Hecla last year. We raised about $40 million in 2022, 10 million of that came from Hecla. So to have their technical team, we've got their VPX, Kurt Allen, who is part of our technical committee. We've got one of their nominees, Jim Sabala, their former CFO, who's on our board of directors. So they are intimately involved in the inner workings of Dolly Varden and have continued to support us both financially and also technically. And I think that really validates what we're doing, how we're doing it, getting their support, getting their endorsement, getting their validation. That's one thing to have a miner, but then also you look at a firm like Fidelity and who typically don't play this far down the food chain. They're mainly focused on companies that are either in cash flow or have very large market caps or more liquidity. The fact that we've got Fidelity in as a 7.5% shareholder, Eric Sprott probably owns about 100 companies that where he is better than a 10% shareholder. Now there's thousands of opportunities. He owns about 100, but Dolly Varden is top 15 in terms of the amount of money he's invested. So it's a top 14 investment for Mr. Eric Sprott. And, I don't want to speak for him, but I would think it would probably rank a little higher than that in terms of how it's performed for him in his portfolio, and how he's been pretty delighted with the prospects and how the organization's been run. So, you know, to have Hecla, to have Eric, to have Fidelity, but then beyond that, there's another 42%. So those three shareholders, 10 Eric, 10 Hecla, 7, so you got 27% of the company in those three hands. Then you've got 42% in the hands of very savvy institutional investors. And I won't name them all, but there's some great institutions that have, again, do a high degree of due diligence before making investments. So we've got, 50% institutional ownership. We've got 20% held by Eric and Hecla. And then we've got 23% of the company held by another publicly traded gold explorer developer in Fury Gold Mines, who have that position through the divestment of the Homestake project. So what I'm highlighting here is we've got 90% of the company in some very savvy, sophisticated, strong hands. And I think that's also one of the reasons that, our stock is up about 34% at a time when you've got the HUI up 3%, silver's up 9%. So, Dolly Varden's actually, of the silver companies I follow, top two in terms of performance. The only one that's performed better is Gatto Silver, was up 70%. But they've also, part of the reason they're up 70% is they had fallen significantly. They had gone from about $15 a share to about $5. So that 70% increase marks them coming off the lows.
Sean, it's a great point on the value of shareholders and the importance. And I think in mining, it's one of those things that I always, in terms of like the first thing everyone kind of looks for when you pick up a miner is who's invested. Obviously, you want to see Sprott, but that point that he's this would be one of his top 14 investments is very fascinating. But the other parts are just – having a major there, in your case, Hecla, I always thought that was, one of the great indicators. And one of the quant studies I always wanted to do is to look at these sorts of things, because mining is one of those industries where the bright minds, the smart money really does sniff out big opportunities first. I always thought that would be a great quant study to see, when a major is invested in a developer, how that always turns out. It's generally always been very good.
Yeah, listen, and I think that, at the end of the day, a lot of these junior miners, they don't have a producing royalty that's paying. There's no cash flow. So you're relying on the charity of shareholders, and you're relying on, an exit. And, where is that exit going to be found? And I think so having a sponsor or having a corporate shareholder is very, very important and a huge differentiator, not only from this validates the merits of the project, but also as an exit strategy.
Great. And Sean, I'm just about to post the Dolly Varden versus Huey graph for last year. It's a good one. I'm going to post that in the net.
And listen, and the great thing for anybody listening today is we're off 30% from our highs. So, had we done this, a month ago, it'd be a different conversation. And so I think, this is a time where the silver price has gone from, call it $26, down to where it is today, $23. And the reason you have just a $3 move in silver causing a 30% drop in a share price is because for a lot of silver miners, their all-in sustaining cost is $20 an ounce. So the difference between $3 and $6 is 100% profitability. And so I really think that, if you take the view that precious metals are going to trade higher, or you take the view that you like the discovery prospects of a company, this is a great time to be looking at value. And I think, this is a good time for investors to be looking at Dolly Varden and to be looking at this pullback as the drills start to turn, you know, we're 10 holes into this program. You know, I'm expecting results probably by the end of July, you know, maybe sooner. And then consistently reporting from in August and September and October, there'll be lots of catalysts for months to come. And if you look at how well we did on the back of some of the discovery news we had last year, like there was a moment there where you could have, could have been a shareholder at around 35 and a half cents Canadian. So call it 36 cents a share. And we've seen the stock as high as $1.24. And so is this pullback from 124 and 80 cents as we get into this drill program, is this the entry point before, you know, either we start putting out some of the discovery news, or as, you know, we get through this next Fed meeting, and if we, if the, the rally continues in the precious metal space?
Sean, always a great discussion, and I have to wrap it up with an important point here. You are joining. You're going to be a lead speaker at our Grizzle Hard Money Conference next Thursday. It's that it's going to be Thursday, June 15th. Gold, silver, and Bitcoin. I have to ask you. You probably had the most interesting answer whenever I talk to anyone in the precious metals world about Bitcoin and the importance, or is it a competitor? Is it a peer? And, you know, what does it bring to light for the overall hard money world?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Bitcoin in that. And it's strange because so many of my peers in the precious metals world view it as a competitor, knock it, you know, try to rip it apart. And I've always taken the view that, you know, Bitcoin has accomplished two things. Number one, it's introduced millennials to all the attributes and all the reasons that I'm a precious metals investor. And so they've inspired and introduced a whole new generation of people to all the attributes that we celebrate in sound money in gold and silver. And I think that there's, you know, so for me, I celebrate Bitcoin. I think there's room for both precious metals and Bitcoin to play nicely in the sandbox. And I think we have more in common than we do apart.
Without a doubt. Well, you know, it's great to have a fresh perspective on it. And Sean, I can't thank you enough for your time, and always great chopping it up. You know, so one thing I do is I got the Bloomberg here, and I try to follow what you say, and I just, you know, pop up the graphs as we do. We should do a live where I'm with the Bloomberg terminal, and you just drop wisdom bombs. Always insightful and helpful for precious metals investors and those who want to protect the value of their hard-earned money and how to do that. And that's hard money.
Yeah. Well, happy to be of service. And, you know, my number one goal at Dolly Varden is servicing our shareholders. I know that sounds corny, but, you know, everything we do it, you know, with the view, is this good for our shareholders? And I'll tell you, it's a lot of hard work, but we're having a lot of fun doing it. We got a great project. We got a great team. We've got phenomenal shareholders that have given us the capital. So, you know, now it's time to continue to demonstrate that this, how great this project is. And I'm excited. I'm excited that we've got these drills turning, and we're going to give shareholders like 150 shots this year. You know, lots of holes will be drilled, and lots of news to come out with. And again, I'll continue to look for acquisitive opportunities in the boardroom, ways that we can continue to grow this company and make it more dynamic than it is today.
Sean, a very exciting year of drilling ahead, and thank you very much for joining us.